Conflict permeates every aspect of modern life, in our homes, on our streets, in our government, our schools, our world. Husband and wife team, Dr. Millicent Carvalho, a professional mediator and licensed social worker, and her husband, Brian Grievous, a retired police detective and former private investigator, tackle conflict of every kind in this no-holds-barred show. Join them now for Why Can't We Get Along?
Welcome to the show. I'm Dr. Millicent Carvalho.
And I'm Brian Grievous.
Today we're going to be discussing the problem of flash mobs. And flash mobs, by definition, are a group of people that respond to a social media invitation. For example, Twitter, instant message, text message, email, or even on Facebook, to have like a public display of an event. Large groups of people that show up in an open air market to act out or choreograph, you know, Michael Jackson's Beat It, for example. People get together to have snowball fights. They have in the past been used for fun. But recently in Philadelphia, flash mobs have focused on being disruptive to the general public, really. Although they have been spectacular for the ability to bring a large group of people together, they have been destructive to people and to property.
Yeah, the question is the distinction of Philadelphia flash mobs have raised some legal issues in my mind regarding the freedom of expression and the freedom of communicate, the ability not to be censured by the government, the freedom to assemble. The Philadelphia flash mobs have engaged in violent and often destructive behavior to both people and property. Should they be deemed illegal? I mean, that's the real question.
Today's guest is Carrie Pitts, a graduate of Bryn Mawr College, Peace and Conflict Studies. She has a master's in strategic communications from the Annenberg School of Communications and Journalism from the University of Southern California. And she is currently completing, yes, her second master's degree from the London School of Economics in organizational psychology. She is someone who's very familiar with the Philadelphia area, having been born, raised, gone to school here, and is working and living in London. And she can offer a really unique perspective about social networking and conflict. And she's one of my favorite people.
Yes, both of us.
Carrie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi, Carrie, how are you? This is Brian Grievous.
I'm fine, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
Well, you know, you're one of my favorite people.
Yeah, both of our famous people. Yes, both of us.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
And full disclosure, we're talking about the phenomena of the flash mobs. And we had an earlier conversation, and we wanted to know how the Philadelphia flash mobs are perceived in England, from the British or the European perspective, and you having known Philadelphia, you know, what is your read on their perception of the flash mobs?
Well, Brian, I think it's a twofold issue. To be honest, the news of kind of what's been going on in Philadelphia with regard specifically to the flash mobs hasn't actually gotten that much news coverage, but it's kind of people's perceptions of Philadelphia as a whole that I think is actually quite alarming. Just kind of news reports that depict Philadelphia kind of as this, like, lawless city. And when I tell people that I'm from Philly, they're like, oh, you know, isn't that really dangerous? And I'm like, no, you know, it's got, you know, its fair amount of crime, but, you know, London also has its fair amount of crime. I mean, any large city kind of attracts people from kind of all areas of, like, kind of stratification of society. So, you know, you've got the good, you've got the bad, it's a city. But here, flash mobs kind of have a different kind of connotation. They really originated as these kind of, like, dance kind of competitions where people would, you know, you'd be in a train station and all of a sudden, you know, music would start and random strangers would start dancing in unison. So as a sort of kind of pop culture phenomenon, it's very, very different. But what people have talked about is kind of this turn from, you know, flash mobs as being this kind of, you know, social networking driven kind of group fun activity to kind of this darker side where, you know, groups are joining kind of with more nefarious kind of purposes and reasoning, and they attribute that solely to America. So in Europe, it's more fun and games and dancing, and in America, we've taken kind of cool concept and turned it into something really, really ugly.
And that's really interesting. Are flash mobs a community? I mean, are there just people who come together because they share a common interest, like for people who come together to dance to Michael Jackson's music in honor of Michael Jackson, they share that common interest. But are they a community in and of themselves, and can they be regulated?
That's actually a really hard question. Yes, I would say they are a community. I think social networking has kind of changed the way we kind of understand community and how that kind of connects us. These virtual networks that people have built, they kind of taken out the localism of kind of like what we think of as community, you know, your neighbor or, you know, the people you go to school with or, you know, the people that you work with. Now your community is kind of based on more interest-driven lines. So I can, you know, build a community of, you know, say people who like painting or a specific type of painting. I can build a community that has people in South Africa, that has people in Germany, or that has people, you know, kind of wherever. So in terms of, do I think they're a community? Most definitely. It's just interest-driven. So case in point, someone posts something on Facebook and goes, hey, Thriller is my favorite Michael Jackson song. Wouldn't it be awesome if we all met at Friday at 8 and we danced to Thriller? And if you know the dance, come. And so kind of what happens is maybe two or three people will start dancing, and then, like, seamlessly people will start to join in. And people are really confused because, like, they were previously doing something else that was completely unrelated to, you know, the dance and, you know, so forth and so forth. So that definitely is a community. But can it be regulated? I don't know. I mean, I think that's where you start to think about kind of privacy acts and privacy laws and, you know, what space is public space? Like, if you build a network online, is that in the public domain? And if that's a part of the public domain, then is it also then susceptible to oversight? And that makes it complicated.
What happens when human interaction produces conflict or people are encouraged to behave in ways that are not only inappropriate, but illegal?
Well, I mean, honestly, I mean, exactly no. I think part of the problem is that obviously if you do an unlawful act, you should be held to whatever kind of the tenets of the law are and be judged accordingly. But in terms of where these postings happen and like the space in which they exist in, I don't know, because a lot of these things are peaceful. They've just recently kind of taken this negative turn. And do you want law enforcement officials or even people who are hosting these sites to have to kind of regulate fun? Yeah. I mean, there's nothing illegal about people dancing in a train station, right? I mean, maybe it's annoying, maybe it's a public nuisance, but there's nothing inherently illegal about it.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but my question, just out of curiosity, are the Philadelphia flash mobs perceived differently by Europeans? What I mean by that, are other flash mobs considered fun and interesting activities to be part of, whereas the Philadelphia flash mobs are seen as violent riots? And does race play into that perception, seeing the Philadelphia flash mobs are made up primarily of African Americans? In your opinion, what's your perception of that?
Flash mobs as a whole, as I said before, are viewed as, you know, something that's kind of awesome and amazing. People are not necessarily discussing the Philadelphia flash mobs in particular, like to be specific, but they're discussing kind of this like American kind of imagining of, you know, flash mobs and it going on to this whole negative thing.
So it's more that Americans aren't sort of being civil.
I'm sorry, go ahead. What?
Well, it's no fun to cut you off when you pause.
It happens to me all the time. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Well, it's good to know. No, but back to your point, though, it's not so much of a Philadelphia-centric thing or specific thing. It's more just, you know, Americans, we are inherently violent, and so therefore the logical progression of anything that we adopt from kind of UK or Europe is kind of inherently negative. And not to say that, to be honest, I have no idea who originated the flash mob. I don't know when the first flash mob was.
What, was it considered a flash mob before Philadelphia became famous because of its flash mobs?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. They didn't coin the term. The term existed long before the whole Philadelphia incident ever appeared on the map. Yeah.
So we didn't take ownership of the mob part of the flash, right?
No, absolutely not, no.
But we're talking about middle-class kids who have internet service on their phones.
Exactly.
And there's usually a cost associated with that. And they're literate. So we're not, I don't want to in any way kind of make an alliance between being African-American and class. But these young people who are involved in the flash mobs in the Philadelphia area are not necessarily
indigent or anything like that. They're not. No, they have means. They're from middle class families. and they have means, and that's what makes it very unusual.
It's disturbing, because then you would hope they would have what we call, you know, middle class
values
in terms of how you behave. And it seems as though there's a sense that they can be anonymous in this, and that's the frightening part, that people can behave in ways that maybe are even counter to how they would normally behave, because they're in a mob, and therefore they can be invisible, and they can do things that they will ordinarily not do. That's what's frightening about this situation in Philadelphia.
But I guess,
yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, we're social animals. Human beings are social animals, so how do they regulate how people interact in a civil manner, just in ordinary human interaction, and using the social networking medium?
Well, we could actually go back to what Dr. Crivello said for a second, kind of about, you know, where do these middle-class values go? I think, kind of like what Brian was speaking about, you know, I think you're kind of negating this whole idea of, like, kind of pack mentality, right? You know, where you're not thinking as this individual person, you're thinking... You're not really even thinking. I mean, you're moving, right? It's like a hive mind as this kind of, you know, larger entity. But I don't think these kids are going out kind of with, like, nefarious purposes in mind. Like, we're going to go kill people, or we're going to go hurt people, or we're going to go steal or do whatever. I just think it's a bunch of kids together who don't really have a lot to do. They don't really have a lot of healthy channels of, like, serving as outlets for kind of all this, like, kind of pent-up just, like, you know, energy. I mean, they're young. And I think these things are exciting, and they escalate. They get completely out of hand. Which goes back to the whole regulation aspect. I mean, but I don't know how you regulate that. I mean, to be completely honest with you, I don't know what the legality is of that. I mean, maybe, Brian, something that you could speak to.
I think the worst response would be for government to try to regulate the freedom of assembly, or to take away that right. That's a First Amendment right. And now, because a few individuals have misbehaved, now they want to take away everyone's right.
One suggestion that was given was to restrict token usage during the hours between 4 and 7.
And that, I don't think, is a possible solution.
No, I think that would be a mistake. I think what will happen is that the flash mob syndrome, so to speak, will become almost like a political protest in response to the police deciding that the people can't meet. And how would you regulate that? And if they're regulating somebody else's use of text messaging and face mail or Twitter, they're listening in on yours or mine or anyone else's, you know, Twitter account. And that would be a total violation.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a Tea Party protest.
Well, no, these are the hot chocolates. So you've got the tea party, you got the coffee party, and then you got the hot chocolate. Right?
Oh my gosh.
I know. I don't know. Hot chocolate meaning that a lot of young people don't drink tea or coffee.
So let me ask you something, Ms. Pitts. With your training and understanding of human interaction, and for lack of a better expression, these flash mobs are informal organizations. How do you see this whole phenomenon moving forward, how it gets managed, whether government gets involved, whether people kind of take it upon themselves to be self-regulatory in this respect? Do you see these things as being growing into another type of phenomenon?
Definitely. If they take the organicness out of kind of this kind of, yeah, phenomenon, I mean, it's definitely a good word, and kind of, if Philadelphia were to own it,
what do you mean by own it? You mean to say this is something that we're going to embrace?
Yeah. So say they say, okay, at 6 o'clock, we're going to have like a tribute to this. You know, you guys come down to Love Park. It'll be from 6 to 7. Everyone can come and watch, and this is how we'll do this, right? You know, maybe if they do things where they make it just uncool. Because I think, speaking back to what you were saying before, Dr. Carvello, that it'll become something like, you know, if the city kind of starts to regulate kind of how people assemble, that flash mobs will happen, kind of a retaliation, like political kind of protest. But really, I don't necessarily think it'd be a political protest. I just think if the city goes, these things are not acceptable, then it becomes cooler to do it.
Oh, I see what you mean.
I don't even think that value proposition is even applied to it. I mean, they're like 16, 17 years old. I don't even think they're thinking, you know, let's fight for our rights. I think they're going, the city says it's bad. We should really do it because it's going to be awesome. But yeah, no, I mean, I think so if the city did, I mean, granted, it would take some of the flashiness out of the flash mob, and I mean, it would really make it more of a kind of an impromptu dance party, but at least it makes it uncool.
But is there some way, you know, I guess I'm listening to that and I'm thinking, okay, that is a way to distinguish this, you know, to extinguish it. This is that is definitely one way to extinguish this kind of behavior, to make it uncool.
Extinguish flash mobs.
Yeah, but there is something that is great about it. It is just it is something that is unique to your generation. It really is. I'm impressed and I'm in awe of it.
Well, from my perspective, anytime you have a medium that brings people together, it's a positive thing. It's what occurs when you bring those people together becomes the question.
Yeah. As you said, if the city of Philadelphia decided that they would encourage people to come together using social networking, then it would make the flash mob phenomenon less cool. So then young people would probably use it less. At least this group of young people would use it less. Because then
It would go back to the spirit of what it really originated as. And it was really just an entertainment kind of thing.
Warped. So it's kind of like, you know, one of my favorite movies is The Day the Earth Stood Still, the original Day the Earth Stood Still. And I can't remember the actor's name.
Keanu Reeves.
I'm waiting for, you know, the clock to the bra, you know, the code that you have to say to the robot to keep the robot, you know, and people who remember the original one can in unison repeat. I mean, it's just like an awesome experience. You know, I would love to have, you know, a social networking, you know, event around, you know, coming together around dialogue for certain movies or, you know, key things like that. So, I mean, I think that's really, really, really cool. That people could do that. So to take the sting out of it, any suggestions?
I think it has to happen more on the back end. It can't happen on the site itself. I mean, because this is just the nature of when you have kind of open channels, you know, things happen, right? You know, a lot of good comes out of social networking. Like, a lot of good comes out of the internet period, right? So, you know, online dating, you know, social networking, you know, kind of, you know, distance learning, like all these things that you can do. But there's also a really bad downside to these things. I mean, pedophilia, you know, like, you know, picking up young girls off of MySpace, posting parties on Facebook, goes out only to your friends, but goes out to your entire network, and the next thing you know, 1,000 people are showing up at your house, right?
Right.
The good and the bad come with it. So I think it's really about on the back end, just even tipping off the police and saying, hey, you know, we're going to have a flash mob at this place, you know, if you want to come, stand in the background, blend in, and if something happens, then you can take care of it.
Right, right.
Well, but they can't regulate the space. They can't go, it's not going
to
work.
So is there a way to kind of indoctrinate these groups of people in the Philadelphia area to use social networking appropriately? Because at one time there was a big discussion about the technical divide, that a lot of African Americans were not utilizing computers and those kinds of things. And clearly these kids have shown that not only are they using it.
That proves that theory.
Yeah, but they will use it. Now, can we get them to use it appropriately?
The other thing I would just say to our audience is that because this is a nationwide audience, so it's not just Philadelphia, it's every major urban city.
And unfortunately, good news travels fast, but bad news travels faster. This model of usage of the mob process will most likely be replicated. And I think what we want to do is really show how people, responsible people, can somehow encourage this, you know, social phenomenon, but also help people use it more appropriately.
In a positive way.
But Dr. Clown, sorry, I mean, how do you even determine what's appropriate? I mean, like, this is the beauty of this space, is that there are no
rules.
Kind of accepted rules of behavior. And the minute you put rules on it, you've taken out the freedom of the space. I mean, this is why the internet has spawned all this innovation, because there's no rules governing its behavior.
But there are intrinsic, internal rules of civility that we're supposed to abide by. Just like you're talking about pedophilia, that the rules of engagement as human beings are that you're not going to harm someone else. That was the beauty of Craigslist. I loved Craigslist. The Craigslist was something that you could go to, was free, that there was a sense of community, and that each person was trying to do something that was going to benefit them. And, you know, it would be not necessarily a win-win or a good exchange, but it would be a fair exchange in terms of being pretty transparent. right?
But most people try to adhere to those things, but if you realize Craigslist, Facebook, you know, eBay, there's always a disclaimer. Because not all people do it. You still can use it, though.
Yeah, there is a disclaimer. But here's, I guess my hope, you know, and one of the reasons why we named this show Why Can't We Get Along is because we believe that people can get along.
Find a way to get along.
That they can. So it's not like, you know, we don't lament, oh my God, I can't believe we can't do this. I say, why can't we do it? We can. And maybe this is a skill that needs to be taught and needs to be learned. You know, and how can we encourage and support the use of social networking for a group of people who have, in many ways, been on the outside of this?
Yes.
So now that they've come into it, now that they've come into this community of people who share an interest, let's not let the interest be public disruption. That cannot be the interest
same,
that brings people together.
That same energy for something positive.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Even if they say,
oh, you know, definitely agree with that.
Make it meaningful for something. But that's the part that frightens me. Is social disruption the only thing that is the common ground for this group? The only thing they have in common? Or does it just happen that people come and they're idle, and then a few people, many people will just mull around, and then you have a few who will bump into people or smash windows, but then the entire group gets blamed for that?
Yes.
So can't they come with a purpose in mind? And what does that mean? One of the things that I've learned in teaching at the college level, that many young people do not work in groups. They don't trust each other. Students will come to me and say, I don't think I can work with other people. Or if students miss a class, they'll come to me and ask me, in effect, can you reteach the class for me because I was out of date? And I'll say, well, you know, talk to one of your peers. I don't trust that they'll give me the right information. And I said, well, you know, try talking to them first, then come back to me, because I've already taught the class. And I said, well, you know, you need to get a buddy, and you need to identify a buddy, and you and the buddy count on each other. So maybe there's a social component here that we're overlooking in our need to somehow not so much control, but to get people to be civil to each other and to the community that they're in, like those businesses or people who are shopping. The takeaway is that social networking is good. It's one of our rights. It's a
First Amendment.
It's a First Amendment right. So because, as you said, these public domains like Craigslist and Facebook are not regulated, meaning they're not regulated by a third party, they have to be regulated internally. There has to be a sense of our connection with one another.
Yes, our sense of humanity.
Our discussion today is not about anything more than the way that we interact with each other.
Yes.
And our relationship to each other. And I think that the foundation upon which this country was developed or organized or founded was not necessarily about how we related to each other. It was really about leave me alone and let me do my thing.
Freedom.
Freedom. Freedom from.
Yes.
Freedom from or freedom to do other things, but not some idea that you and I are connected. That you and I, Brian, you and I are connected. Carrie, you and I, even though you're 5,000 miles away in England, we are connected. We're intrinsically connected as human beings.
But that's a moral and ethical issue.
You have these flash mobs and they have a shared interest that has been identified, then they're going to come together to do something that might be fun. But even if it's not necessarily your definition of fun, it's organized. But if they don't come together under some shared interests and they don't have a sense of being interconnected, I think that you have a situation that can, all you need are a few members to act up and others will join in.
That's true.
Because they get all excited because then the mood happens. You get that mob mentality.
I agree.
If you're a parent, if you're a member of the police department, you know, what can you do? I think the first thing is not to panic.
And don't you mean they should not issue martial law?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right, so we can put away the riot gear. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Put away the riot gear. That would be. I think Carrie is absolutely right. It would now become, we're going to do this in spite of. And it would make it not only cool, but dangerously cool to engage in this. And I think, you know, and we can't win. The law of the numbers, we can't win. We can't win that way. But I do think it's a time to sit back and reflect about how we're connected. I mean, and this is the time. I mean, with so many things going on, we are really, as a nation, having to rethink how we connect and relate to each other.
That's very insightful. That's very insightful.
I agree. Dr. Carell, yeah, you definitely have a lot of insights. I think this is also an opportunity. Maybe you could do like a gap study and kind of identify what the like generally accepted kind of practices are in social networks.
A gap
kind
study?
Of go from that.
Now, do we have funding for this study?
Now, this
oh,
say,
yes, sure.
Well, wait a minute. When you say,
break my piggy bank and give it to you guys.
Yeah. Now, when you say a gap study, now I have not attended the London School of Economics. Does that mean like when we say gap study, I'm thinking go to the Gap, I mean the store? But what is a gap study?
No, it's the acronym for generally accepted practices.
Okay. Oh, really?
So we can hire
Ms.
Pitts as a consultant.
But would you actually go out and poll people in the mob? You walk amongst the people and
essentially what you would do is you would go through and you would just look at the phenomenon behind the flash mobs, right? Like, how do people come together? What's the difference between, like, a peaceful kind of gathering versus a, you know, kind of one that is unpeaceful? And then you figure out, like, what are the gaps in that? And then you build off of that literally a list of, you know, what is, like, not necessarily acceptable behavior, but what's common? Like, what are the common behaviors that work?
Maybe some of these young people are idle. They don't have anything to do. They don't have an after-school job to go to. They don't have an after-school activity. And we know that the hours between 4 and 7 for young people between the ages of 10 and, I think, 21 are key hours. Maybe we need to keep them busy. They should be working.
Yeah, well, there's a whole lot of breadwinners that should be working also. So.
Absolutely.
Just to remember that, you know, social networking is an awesome resource for community building kind of outside of your normal scope of kind of, you know, influence, and that you can find anything and everything out there. Obviously, be careful because, you know, as you were saying before, Dr. Carvello, there's not exactly kind of set, you know, guidelines of kind of conduct, but that, you know, it's a great resource to have, and I'm really excited to see what will happen in the future.
We're out of time, and I want to thank you very much for being a guest on our show. What, do you have any other last thoughts for our listeners?
I guess just to, you know, remember that social networking is a great resource, but like anything that's not kind of, I guess, regulated, it can come at a price. And so just to remember that you kind of set your own personal rules, but to understand that maybe not everyone else adheres to the same ones, and just to be careful.
Well, thank you. Well said.
Very well said.
Thank you.
Yes, and best of luck with your studies.
Thank you very much, Dr. Carvello and Mr. Grievous. You guys are awesome. You're my favorite people, too.
Okay. Yeah. You're listening to Why Can't We Get Along? I'm Dr. Millicent Carvello.
And I'm Brian Grievous.
Take care. All right. It's a wrap.
Thanks for joining us today for Why Can't We Get Along on WebTalkRadio.net. You can direct your comments or questions directly to Millicent at MILLICENT. That's Millicent at whycan'twegetalong.com. If you'd like to contact Brian, please email him at Brian, BRIAN, at whycan'twegetalong.com. Have a great week, and remember, don't hate, mediate.